Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the latest Empire Podcast special inspired by something in the mag. That's hashtag brand synergy right there. This one is quite simply the 50 greatest villains of all time. And over the next hour or so, we'll be going through that list and discussing it with Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
Johnny Pyle.
Hello.
And making a long way to return to the pod booth, Ian Freer.
Hello, Chris.
How are you, sir?
Good, man.
It's good to have you back. Right, now this list is different from the previous list we talked about on special podcasts.
So correct.
We had a special Star Trek podcast and a special Sci-Fi Moments podcast, because this list was not compiled by the members of Team Empire. This was compiled by some of the greatest movie villains of all time. Now, this is a cracking list. So literally these people submitted their list of the top 10, their top 10 favorite villains of all time. We took those, we compiled it, and the result is what you have now. But some of the villains, 26 of them in total. Tobin Bell, Jigsaw from the Saw movies. Clancy Brown, the Kurgan himself, and of course from Shawshank Redemption as well. Stephen Berkoff, Victor Maitland in Beverly Hills Cop. William B. Davis, a cigarette-smoking man from The X-Files. Rebecca De Mornay, Peyton Flanders from The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. Christopher Eccleston, who can forget, of course, Malekith the Accursed in Thor the Dark World. Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger. Louise Fletcher, Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Alan Ford, Bricktop from Snatch. Michelle Gomez, who's the current version of the Master on Doctor Who. Sid Haig, a.k.a. Captain Spaulding. Daryl Hannah, L. Driver in Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. Michael Ironside, Daryl Revok from Scanners. And, of course, Richter from Total Recall as well. Jason Isaacs, Lucius Malfoy from Harry Potter. Famke Janssen, Senya Onatopp from GoldenEye. Hugh Keysburn, the Immortan Joe himself. David Patrick Kelly, Sully from Commando. Sir Ben Kingsley. Don Logan in Sexy Beast. Alice Krieg, the Borg Queen from Star Trek First Contact. John Lithgow, Eric Quaylen, Cliffhangers, Eric Quaylen. Mads Mikkelsen, the Shifra, and of course Hannibal Lecter. David Morrissey, the Governor from The Walking Dead. Robert Patrick, the T-1000. Joseph Pilato, Captain Rhodes from Day of the Dead, the joke on him guy. Andrew Robinson, Scorpio from the first Dirty Harry movie, and he plays a villain of sorts in Hellraiser as well. And Kurtwood Smith, the great Clarence Boddicker from Robocop. That's a lineup.
That's a panel.
If that was the list itself, you'd be pretty happy with that. That's a good lineup. And what's interesting is that this lineup of bad guys, not many of them actually made the final list.
Yeah, they didn't vote for themselves or each other for the most part.
That's quite heroic, really, isn't it? Ironically,
a big exception at the number two spot, not because that person voted for themselves, but no. That person is one of the voters.
Absolutely. But for example, we'll talk about big omissions later on as we go through the list. But Captain Rhodes from Dead of the Dead. I'm a big horror fan, big Romero fan. I would have Captain Rhodes on the list. I would have Scorpio on the list and Clarence Boddicker. That's just a name, but three who aren't actually on the list. That's very interesting.
Yeah, I might have Christopher Eccleston from Gone in 60 Seconds.
The Mancunian villain of Gone in 60 Seconds. I'd have Malekith the Accursed at number three. What a bad guy. Just ahead of Ronan the Accuser. Right, should we go through the list? Let's go in reverse order. Previously, we kind of got bogged down discussing the smaller entries, so we'll race through these and then we'll try and discuss the top 20 in some sort of detail. How's that sound?
Sure.
And then we'll talk about some omissions, because I've got one. Right, this is interesting. So we'll start off with Dracula. Christopher Lee's Dracula, seen in Hammer's Horror of Dracula, if you're American. Everyone's happy with that? Dracula?
Yeah, well, that's the only character that appears twice.
It is, correct.
The Bela Lugosi one later on?
Comes in at 45, yeah.
Ooh, not the Gary Oldman one. Interesting. No. Very, or the Jack Palance one.
Well, our voters were classic horror fans, I think, as is clear from this list.
This is interesting.
Bela Lugosi was by far the more popular choice over Oldman.
So I think Christopher Lee's Dracula is way better.
I think that's the thing. That with so many people playing Dracula, from Christopher Lee, Bela Lugosi, Leslie Nielsen, they're splitting the vote somewhat, aren't they? It's like Bruce Springsteen albums in a top 100 album.
Yeah.
Like, all of them are popular and amazing, but people, if they're just choosing one, will go for different ones, and then so he comes lower down the list than you would think.
So I think Christopher Lee's Dracula, I would put him higher up the list, but that's a very interesting choice. And I certainly put him ahead of Bela Lugosi, who just went, ooh, and Bela Lugosi.
Hey.
Yeah. Just saying. No, he's great. He's great. Love him. Number 49. This is interesting. Vito Corleone.
But as we've discussed, actually, in the magazine, this one really did split. The Godfather vote really was split. There were many votes for several different figures in the Godfather trilogy.
But I don't think the film invites you to think of them as villains, does it?
Yeah, exactly. I think that's part of the reason that the votes were split.
Now, what's interesting is our list has the Robert De Niro version of that character from Godfather Part 2 and not, for example, the Marlon Brando version from The Godfather, who I don't think is necessarily a bad guy in that movie. But, yeah, what do we think of that? Vito Corleone.
I'd go Michael over. I think if there's a sort of arc of evil, it's Michael, isn't it, in that series? It seems strange to pick Vito.
Yeah. I mean, does it come down to what your definition... What's your definition of a villain? What would you say, Johnny?
Like, steals and stuff.
Steals and stuff. Like, does bad things.
Yeah, like, breaks the law.
Yeah.
Like, plays nasty pranks on people.
Yeah.
I mean, not a funny one where they laugh about it afterwards, where they're actually, like, hurt. That's...
Yeah, where there's at least a nosebleed.
Yeah, I mean, there's different types of pranks. Like, some pranks are funny. Like, the pranks I play, they're funny, but the ones against me are not funny.
I think you're sounding increasingly like a villain here. This is interesting. Like one of those actors who goes, no, you never play evil. No, you can't be. There's no such thing. But,
Everyone thinks they're the good guy.
Yeah, precisely.
I'm not
precisely.
Sure some of these guys do. I think some of these guys are perhaps aware.
Yeah, I think Robert Eglund is struggling to convince himself he's the good guy, right?
I don't see Freddy Krueger as evil necessarily. He's just a misunderstood guy. But it's interesting because, you know, to be a villain, don't you have to have a hero to be railing against? And Vito Corleone and indeed Michael Corleone don't have that. You would argue. Yeah, I would argue.
Well, they have the other four families, don't they?
I guess they do.
But those are not
see them
what
as
you
heroes.
Call heroes, no. Yeah.
So I think that's really interesting. Personally, I would go Michael Corleone there as well.
I mean, they are, in a general sense of the world, they are villainous people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a cop.
But present, and, you know, if you were a decent, upstanding member of society, as the four of us are, then, you know, you would, in real life, consider them to be the bad guys, but they're presented as, you know, the people to root for in those films.
Next up, 48. No arguments here. Freddy Krueger.
It's interesting how it became a comedy character as it went along, didn't it, that character?
Yeah.
It kind of went funny, didn't it?
I think that's the danger with a lot of villains. You know, they say if your franchise goes on long enough, you become the hero. You know, that kind of happened to Darth Vader. And it's happened to a lot of characters in sort of kids' movies, that the villain becomes redeemed and starts working with
The Terminator took two films.
I mean, X-Men, two films. It happens a lot. If the villain is popular, he becomes the good guy. And I think that's not quite what happened with Krueger. Obviously, he's not the good guy at any point, but he is. The edges are rubbed off him quite fast.
Well, people are there to cheer him doing his thing, right?
Yeah.
They're not there to be, like, scared by him anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You tune into the later Nightmare on Elm Street movies, not Wes Craven's New Nightmare, where he is evil once again and truly monstrous, to see how he's going to dispatch these teenagers, which creative and inventive and funny ways, and he's got the cackling one-liners, and certainly that's the way the character went. And quite quickly as well. I mean, Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is quite dark, but also there's the beginning of the cackling vaudeville comedian. Mm. Who just happens to have fingers for knives. Knives for fingers, rather. Fingers for knives.
I would draw full of fingers instead of knives.
Yeah.
That would be inefficient.
That would be. What's interesting, not to spoil too much about the list, but he's the only one, as far as I can see anyway, of the major horror icons of the 70s and 80s to make this list. There's no Leatherface, there's no Pinhead, there's no Michael Myers, there's no Jason Voorhees. I think there's something.
Is that something about the age of people who are voting on this list?
Possibly.
In terms of, you know, those would be our generation's villains, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Whereas the list of villains here, they look older than us.
Yeah.
I mean, I think also that these people are, you know, they're actors and almost want to be seen as, like, quite intelligent. Whereas we can say, oh, Michael Myers, you know, Freddy Krueger, they are the people who, you know, we really connect with. I think if you're in this position where you're an actor yourself and you're posed this question, you're like, well, I better not come off stupid. I better not come off populist.
Yeah. It's always tricky putting these lists together.
But in fairness, I mean, I have to say, having looked at the votes and Owen Williams did sterling work actually getting a hold of all these people and compiling this list for us.
Thanks, Owen.
And many people sent in reasons for some of their choices, and you know, they're solid reasons. These people have thought them through. A special props to Clancy Brown, who put huge amounts of effort into it and wrote us some really detailed descriptions for his choices. So thanks very much to him. But yeah, I mean, I think there might be an element certainly of both your points, actually, both, you know, going for the people that scared them as kids, and then also, you know, going for the classy choice as opposed to us unclassy people.
Me, unclassy?
That's impossible.
I know. Next up, 47, Jack Colby, Lee Van Cleef from High Noon. No arguments here.
No.
46, Guy Woodhouse, John Cassavetes, as Rosemary Baby's not daddy. If you know what I mean.
Oh, he's awful. He's genuinely... He is genuinely
so... He's got
so,
great hair in that film.
He's got great hair, but he's so creepy.
He is creepy in that film. 45, we've talked about this already, Dracula, the Bela Lugosi vintage. 44... Mary Poppins.
Yeah, let me explain.
What's
this
the
one.
Argument here?
The argument is that one of our voters put her at number one, and that was enough to get her to 44 on the list.
And no one else voted for her.
No.
Can you reveal who that person was?
I can reveal it was Michelle Gomez. Yes, I think there is actually an argument to be made here, because if, especially, think less about the film for a minute. If you've read the books or seen the stage play, Mary Poppins is absolutely terrifying. She's terrifying. The stage play is really traumatic. There's a bit where the kids, the Banks kids, have been mistreating their toys, and so she arranges things so basically they shrink to tiny proportions, and their toys put them on trial for essentially murder. And there are these little kids being surrounded by all these terrifying giant teddy bears and stuff, and it's honestly very upsetting. Now, admittedly, yes, that's the stage play, not the film, but if you divorce the fact that it's Julie Andrews from the film, she does become a lot more sinister. I think this is true of The Sound of Music as well. If you take Julie Andrews out of that equation, she's a weirdo. She's a psychotic weirdo that people have invited into their house and given their children into her hands, and she's doing crazy things with them, and it's not safe. And I think Julie Andrews is the only woman who can like somehow sell us on these people being okay as nannies, but they're really not okay as nannies.
You're making me sound like Hand That Rocks the Cradle, aren't you?
It's a little bit.
I mean, you want to see Lon Chaney's Mary Poppins.
I want to see Lon Chaney's Mary Poppins. That's correct.
That would put a whole new spin on it.
So I think there's material there to justify this choice.
I don't think so. She gives people sugar. No one who gives anyone sugar.
No, which
she
actually
says
evil in these
a
days.
Spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down. We don't see any sugar actually changing hands.
But think about diabetes. Think about childhood obesity. Like. What horrors is she putting in store for these children's futures?
Oh, God. Yeah, you're right. You've turned me around in this. Yeah, she is terrifying. Great song, though. 43, Ernst Stavro Blofeld.
That's much higher for me.
Yeah?
That's a seminal, isn't it?
That's an all-timer.
Yeah, Donald Pleasance is in You Only Live Twice.
Yes.
Yeah. That's the... Again, it might come from that Dr. Evil thing. It's become funny now.
Mm. Yeah, possibly.
You know, maybe it's been...
Possibly. And also, I think the most recent version of that character wasn't maybe as successful as they were hoping for.
What? There's been a recent Blofeld? I didn't hear about that.
Did you notice?
A guy called Oberhauser, wasn't it?
Dr. Evil's not on the list either. In fact, there's not a lot of comedy bad guys. That's interesting. Yeah. But yeah, Blofeld, I'd probably have Blofeld further up the,
he's
up
top
the
10,
list.
Isn't he? He's top 10.
I don't know if he's top 10. Is he above Goldfinger? For you as a Bond villain?
That's a good point, yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, the difficulty, I suppose, in any of the Bond villains or in this list in general is deciding, are we ranking them on their iconicness? Are we ranking them on how evil they are?
Oh, he's Gary Blofeld.
But is he the most evil of the evil? What's his plan in You Only Live Twice? It's a hollowed-out volcano lair. What does he actually want to achieve?
He's stealing spaceships, isn't he?
I mean, that seems all right. We would steal a spaceship if we could.
And who doesn't want a hollowed-out volcano as their home?
He seems fun.
Japan's lovely that time of year as well, so he's a man of taste. And he's got that lovely sort of Nehru suit.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely taste and fashion as well.
Goldfinger is irradiating gold using... a flight crew of dolly birds, isn't
yeah.
he?
So that, I mean,
that's probably the most evil.
Again, that doesn't seem like too bad. I mean, Christopher Walken's a pretty evil dude, right? He's yeah. killing, like, millions, right?
Yeah, but yeah, it's Silicon Valley, though.
Isn't there the dude who wants... Well, didn't one of them want to basically irradiate the Earth and set up an undersea civilization? Was that Octopussy?
That's Stromberg,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty evil, yeah, like, on a scale of Bond villainy.
Yeah, and Drax from Moonraker wants to do the same thing in space, doesn't he?
Right, okay, so they're quite evil.
Yeah.
We disapprove of that.
Kind of Aryan race in space.
Ah, Nazis on the moon sort of stuff.
Yeah. But I suppose, yeah, what we are rating here is iconicness, aren't we? The greatest ones are the ones that really stick in your mind. And so in that case, of course, Blofeld, of course. In my opinion, Blofeld should be higher up that list.
Interesting. 42, Dad Longworth, Carl Malden from One-Eyed Jax.
Yeah, it's quite hard to argue with, I guess.
As is probably Bill Gillespie, Rod Steiger's character from In the Heat of the Night, number 41.
It's interesting with that one because he's not in the villain role.
And also he gets redeemed at the end, which is... Again, you could see why that would appeal to actors, wouldn't it? Where this character goes through a journey. That would be something that a lot of these characters go through journeys in these films. So that would be something that would appeal to actors voting.
Number 40, Freddie Fletcher as Judd Casper in Ken Loach's Kes.
I mean, we've given away a big spoiler, by the way, in that piece of copy. If you haven't seen Kes, first of all, be ashamed. And second of all, don't read that little paragraph.
Number 39, Eric... and Ernie. No, Eric the Phantom. The Phantom, Lon Chaney's Phantom from The Phantom of the Opera. Probably the best Phantom. I mean, Michael Crawford, obviously. Cherry Butler. Tough. what do we reckon?
Not quite as much of a villain as some other Phantoms of some other operas, I think. But just the memory of...
But the first.
Yeah, the first. And the look as well is definitely set here.
This is where we come back to how iconic these characters are, which is the iconic... You could have a Phantom that, strangles people and murders them in their beds, but we just don't know about that Phantom, so he's not iconic.
Next three are very interesting. So we have our first Shakespearean villain, Iago from Othello, the Kenneth Branagh version.
Yeah, I think they're voting for the character.
As in Kenneth Branagh plays him, not... Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to, is that a memorable film performance?
It's not the most memorable film, but it was a good performance, obviously. It's Branagh playing Shakespeare. It's going to be pretty decent. And maybe people didn't want to vote for the blacked-up Laurence Olivier version. Not that Iago was blacked up, obviously, but...
Yeah, I think in these enlightened times...
Thank you. Yes.
That would be a mistake.
Indeed. Let's not go back and watch that one.
Dwight Hanson, number 37, is a Robert De Niro character from This Boy's Life.
So this is the first time someone's appeared twice, right? This is De Niro's second appearance on the list.
He's coming up again in a minute, isn't he?
He is coming up again in a minute.
Spoilers! I was okay with spoilers. Okay, that's fine.
He's great in that movie. That's an underrated movie, that film.
Yeah.
You picture him in his scout uniform.
It's like you're reading it out where it starts one of De Niro's most underrated turns.
Well, it's an interesting...
The film's on DiCaprio Trivik in that film as well. It's a great film.
What's interesting is that De Niro does appear once more in the list. Not necessarily for the role you might think. But that's a good performance. And he is terrifying. In real life as well. This is Robert De Niro. It's like, oh my god. 36, our first animated bad guy, the Id from Forbidden Planet. It's a special effect essentially. 35, Jack Palance's Blackie from Panic in the Streets, Elia Kazan's film noir.
That's an odd choice, isn't it? Who would have thought of that? That's a really interesting choice.
Who did think of that, Helen?
I don't remember.
Oh,
sorry.
Leo! 34. James Fatso Judson, Ernest Borgnine's character from Here to Eternity.
Oh, yeah, he was awful. Yeah. It's another bully role, isn't it? And it's very, very... It's one of the most hissable roles in cinema, I think, his turn there. He's awful. Poor little Frank Sinatra.
33. I think you may be surprised to see this person so low down the list. It's only Bloomin' Darth Vader.
33. This is interesting because if we are talking about iconicness, which I believe is a word.
I believe it's iconicization.
Iconicization. Yeah. Then obviously that would be much higher up the list. But if we're talking about, I don't know, a villainy or performance, I think a lot of these are, you're right, it's an actor thing, and it's not so much the performance that shines through there as the iconicness of him.
Yeah, the silhouette of it.
And that's why he's kind of fallen down a bit, I guess.
Of course, yeah, it's an amalgamation of different performances, indeed, isn't it, really, as well? So,
I suppose in many ways, if you take Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, he is the villain, but actually across the whole saga, he's not. Yeah. He's a hero who is redeemed eventually.
Indeed. Yeah, so maybe that's why they've...
That's not why, that. But...
Let's pretend it is.
I wonder if that's something where over the years, as with your previous theory, that sometimes bad guys end up being, if not heroic, then certainly more sympathetic in films, or treated more sympathetically by films. Maybe you wonder if Darth Vader is now such an icon, people don't necessarily think of him entirely as the bad guy.
Yeah,
possibly. I mean, for example, Jared Leto's Joker in Suicide Squad is, I think, seen very much in a sort of almost heroic light at the end of the movie. It's very interesting.
Yeah, that's weird, because Vader was treated like that almost from the get-go. There were commercials just after Star Wars of him fighting the Energizer Bunny.
Right.
Who won?
So the Energizer Bunny.
Really?
Yeah. So it's you know, he was always had that kind of potential to be a fun villain.
I think we're really getting to meet the list now. Annie Wilkes from Misery.
Oh, terrifying. 32. Absolutely terrifying figure. You know, it's the sort of... I think actually Misery's a little bit due for a revival, because I think she's a figure. She's the sort of the fan, the stalker, the obsessive. It's quite a modern figure, actually. It's sort of almost ahead of its time, this film. And it's an incredible performance. God, she's good in it.
She's fantastic. Did you see that viral video that went around last week of an actress pretending to be her in a bookstore demanding to read Paul Sheldon's Misery? It was obviously set up, but quite funny. And an Oscar-winning performance as well. I wonder how many people have won Oscars so far throughout the list. Maybe we'll do a little compile. We'll compile that later on. 31. Another Bond bad guy. Red Grant.
Yeah, terrific.
Robert Shaw from Russia with Love.
One of the very few actors and performances you could feel could compete with Bond physically. So that fist fight on the train, that feels like a proper match-up, where a lot of times it kind of doesn't.
Yeah, he's got a great introduction as well, hasn't he? He's, you know, stalking and killing Bond.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. He's fantastic in that. Really, really great.
And his famous slip-up is about the red wine and fish, isn't it? Which is perfectly acceptable now. People absolutely love red wine and fish.
He'd be alive now.
Yeah.
He'd live. I think he's the last Bond bad guy on the list. Am I right in thinking that? I think he is.
And there's a way of checking. Hang on.
Yeah. I'm just trying to do without with by remembering.
What is this remembering? Yeah,
maybe it's because he's, and this is a relative thing, he is more human than most of them, isn't he? He's not megalomaniac. There's a kind of human quality to him.
Yeah, because we're not really, you know, no one plumped for the larger life characters like the Jawses, or indeed the Senya Onatopps. Famke Janssen's part of the committee, if you will, the bad guy committee. But ultimately, Red Grant, 31. This next one's very interesting as well.
Yeah.
Number 30, Meryl Streep's Miranda Priestly from The Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, 100%. She's totally interesting villainous figure. It's that she is one of the sort of more, again, human scale figures on the list, I think. But she's every mean girl that you've ever met. She's everybody who's ever looked down their nose at you because they are better than you at something.
Yeah.
In her case, pretty much everything. This is the really annoying thing. She is that good. She does get to sneer a little bit. And it's very, very hard to put up with that, really.
But I think the best scene in that film is where she explains the value of fashion to Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
It's a great piece of writing for a start.
She sort of philosophically demolishes her as well. Yeah.
It's terrific.
Interesting. I haven't revisited it since I saw it the first time, so maybe I need to rewatch that one. I don't think there's any arguments about this one. Number 29. Alex Forrest, Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction, someone who, you know, culturally made a huge impact. I think we have the phrase bunny boiler entirely because of this character.
I would argue with this, actually. I think she's we kind of made this point in the piece. She's the kind of the villain of the, or the victim of the film as well. She's the only one who actually dies in the end. And, you know, she is really badly treated at the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, yes.
But does that then justify her?
I'm not saying it justifies her, but I think she is, again, it's a bit of a... It's quite a nasty film when you go back and look at it now, and I think she suffers from that as well. I don't know.
But when she is on,
okay, fine, she boils
when
a bunny.
She's in
that's
film
not
mode.
Good.
Yeah,
fine.
She does that. Place assured in the villainous pantheon, and great performance as well. As indeed is number 28, Dennis Hopper as Frank Booth in Blue Velvet. I mean, this one is just amazing.
Yeah, it's off the chain, isn't it? It's terrific.
Yeah,
yeah. We go from very human scale, understated a few minutes ago, to
yeah. He's not a guy who's holding anything back in this, but again, he's got so many great moments in this movie. I mean, his entrance is terrifying. You have Kyle MacLachlan trapped in the wardrobe. You have his numerous catchphrases, yeah. Which I seem to quote more often than I'm comfortable with. But yeah, Heineken, fuck that shit, Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I've literally never heard you say that.
I do quote that a lot. Well, obviously I don't drink, so I don't know why I would quote that, but I do quote that a lot. But yeah, he's so good in that film. So good. Now, sequence, of course, where he's listening to Dean Stockwell.
Yeah, doing it in Dreams.
Yeah.
Oh. Orbison, yeah.
Amazing.
I mean, it's nice to have a Dennis Hopper role in there, but it doesn't seem like the right one when he was such a phenomenal King Cooper.
He was good.
I mean, that tongue thing he does, I don't know where...
Don't give it away. He might be number three.
Okay, he might, sorry.
Don't give it away. Number 27, Harry Lime. Orson Welles, Third Man.
Actually, can I just say at this point, I actually am trying to avoid spoilers for this. I have it on Blu-ray and I haven't watched it.
Oh, so now you care about spoilers.
Look,
he kills a hawk.
He's so charming in this film.
I've only had 60 years.
When he steps out into the street and smiles like that, it's just a charming thing. So, you know, I'm not sure he's a villain.
But that's it, isn't it? He kind of is.
Well, he might be, he might not be. Why are we lingering on this?
I think we should talk about it for another 5 or 10 minutes in great detail.
Yeah, I think at the end when...
yeah. This one, the next one's a bit of an offbeat choice as well. It's Bruce Dern in The Cowboys. 1972's The Cowboys as Asa Watts.
It's another bullying role, isn't it, really? You know, a fully grown man against a bunch of school kids. I think that's maybe why it's stuck with people.
Yeah. I don't care. It's got a great John Williams score. That's what I care about.
You happy with
That's all the in demand in the film. Damn it.
Exactly. Very limited expectations.
You happy with the choice, Ian?
Yeah, it's a good choice, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's an interesting choice, and I think quite a lot of the format of how we've compiled this list means there are interesting choices for people to maybe discover new films that, you know, they haven't seen, or maybe, you know, just reassess things, because actually it's probably more interesting to read the one that says Vader 1, Blofeld 2.
Number 25. Vincenzo Cocotti, Christopher Walken in True Romance. And this is basically based on one scene, isn't it?
I haven't seen this film since it came out, but isn't he only in one scene?
He's only in that one scene with Dennis Hopper, where Dennis Hopper plays Christian Slater's dad. Hmm. And that amazing Tarantino script.
Well, the interesting thing is, it's not his scene either. It's Dennis Hopper's scene.
Yeah.
He has the monologue, and all Walken does is react to it. You know, and he is the villain in that scene, but it's absolutely not his moment. Remember?
I think it's well, no, you're right. I did have a huge amount of sympathy for Dennis Hopper in that movie.
I mean, the real interesting villain for me in True Romance is James Gandolfini's character.
Yeah.
That, I mean, that is a horrific scene when he corners Patricia Arquette.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that this list is quite light of Tarantino, isn't it? You kind of think of him as someone who'd create memorable bad guys, and is he the only one?
Yeah, I mean, there's no Hans Landa, for example.
Hans Landa, you think of?
Yeah, which I wonder if people think of Hans Landa as a bad guy.
Yeah,
which is really weird because he's despicable.
So entertaining.
Yeah, and obviously he won many, many Oscars. I think 5 for the one role.
But it's almost a thing we were talking about with The Godfather, isn't it? You spend in Tarantino films, you spend time with these villains, and they are therefore, you know, not as villainous as they might appear if you were like observing them from afar.
And there are fewer kind of villainous masterminds, I guess, in his films. I mean, there's Bill and there's Hans, but apart from that, it's...
But Bill, we hang out with him at his house for, you know, part of it. Like, he's...
Talk about Superman, brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, so he's not... I mean, he is the villain, but he's not like cackling and...
Yeah.
But you can say the same about a lot of Bond villains, hang out at their house, you know.
But it is interesting. I mean, if you go through the Tarantino filmography, I mean, obviously Mr. Blonde,
yeah,
in Reservoir Dogs.
But again, he's kind of
Jackie Brown.
Yeah,
bad guy.
They don't emerge the same way as the villains and on this list. Like Mr. Blonde sort of steps forward out of the ensemble as, you know, the psychotic one, but he is one among thieves to begin with, so it sort of feels a little bit different to me somehow. I don't know.
Odell, for example, has, you know, one of the most quotable bad guys, you know, AK-47, you absolutely positively got to kill every motherfucker in the room, etc., etc., etc. Hans Landa, I think, in Inglourious Basterds is a great bad guy as well. I don't know. That's very intriguing. But I don't think it's as intriguing as the next one. 24. I said earlier on there would be one more Robert De Niro on the list. It's not the character you might think. It's not, for example, Max Cady from Cape Fear. It's Travis Bickle. And again, I think this goes back to notions of what is a bad guy. Because he's clearly deranged. He's clearly dangerous. He's clearly psychopathic. But is he a villain?
I just think he's misunderstood. But then, yeah, I mean, the end, he's treated as a hero, isn't he? He's killed the pimps, he's rescued Iris, and he's lauded in the press as this kind of hero. But there's a creepiness about that, isn't there? It's the kind of first time that, you know, society treats its mental people, its crazy people as heroes.
Yeah. But again, it goes back to that idea, can you be a villain if you don't have a hero to rail and to plot against and to pitch yourself against? And, you know, if the film's not told from a hero's point of view, or if it's a villain's point of view but told as a hero's point of view, does that make you a bad guy? I mean, at one point he plots to assassinate a politician. It doesn't go through with it, obviously, but there is that element to the story as well. At the end of the movie, he massacres a whole bunch of people. Is that a hero or a bad guy? I can't tell.
It's a bad guy, Chris.
It's a bad guy.
Massacres a whole bunch of people.
I massacred a whole bunch of people last night. Oh no. 23. Colonel Kurtz. Marlon Brando. Apocalypse Now.
I wonder if this is the villain on this list with the smallest amount of screen time, which is about, you know, it's what, 10 minutes at the end, is it?
Well, part of me was certainly up there, Christopher Walken, as we've discussed.
Of course, yeah.
And number one does not have a huge amount of screen time either. That's one of the Oscar winners with the least screen time.
Spoilers about films apart from The Third Man, no spoilers about the list.
We can't give away as Judi Dench as
Queen Victoria.
We can't do that. Colonel Kurtz, Marlon Brando.
I don't understand this. I don't see how. I mean, it's a fascinating performance and it's an interesting character. It's a completely unexpected end to the film, but I don't see how he's the greatest, one of the 50 greatest villains of all time.
But he's such, again, it's iconic, isn't it? He's got that look and he's got the dialogue that you cannot make out no matter how much you listen to it.
And he has got a whole bunch of dead bodies around him.
Yes, and he drops a head in the lap.
I'm sorry, Chris, could you repeat that?
We actually have a quote from Colonel Kurtz. It's not just him going, I mean, how? Who deciphered that? Did you have the subtitles on?
I think somebody had the subtitles on or the script in front of them, to be honest.
Horror and moral terror are your friends, is the quote. In the movie, that's probably, and you're just going, what? And Francis Ford Coppola going, I'm about to have a heart attack. I don't care.
It's a fascinating idea, though, where you've gone through this almost this war film and it decides to end itself philosophically, ends up on this kind of debate.
And again, he's just, I think he's such an incredible, his first appearance, just the way you see him, everything he does. Helen's just rubbed her head I don't think she meant to do it, but in that sort of very Kurtz-esque way.
Yeah.
You know, and he's become shorthand, hasn't he, for bad guys who go off
rogue,
the deep end.
Go off the reservation, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a good choice. I'm happy with that choice. Oh my god, it's a child catcher.
Oh god.
Oh Jesus. Played by the aptly named Robert Helpman.
Help.
In Chitty Titty Bang Bang. Now this guy's not number one, I don't know. It haunts my dreams.
Yeah, if this vote had been if this list had been compiled by kids, this guy would be number one with a bullet, and he'd then be numbers 2 through 10 as well. Like, he's just terrifying.
And it's in the name.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, this is one of those characters where there's no ambiguity about, he's a misunderstood guy, I don't really see him as evil.
Children are falling out of trees. He's just running around with a big net. I've got you.
Oh, so you're basically like Bill Murray in Groundhog Day.
He's Bill Murray in Groundhog Day. He's the child catcher as well. I think it's a perfectly ambiguous name.
Okay. All right. I'm not convinced. I'm not convinced at all. He's terrifying. Everything about him is terrifying. Okay. 21. The Joker.
But
not just any old Joker. Heath Ledger's Joker.
Yeah, correct.
So another Oscar winner on this list.
Yeah, this is really hard to argue with, even though his plan doesn't make a lick of sense, let's be honest. Let's be honest, people. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I don't know if there is a plan, is there? Isn't the plan just to, like, seed chaos?
Yeah, but it doesn't maybe... Look, it's a very long conversation.
Are you talking about the plan where he lets himself be arrested?
Yeah.
Only to cause havoc in the police station, even though he would have no knowledge whatsoever of A, where he was put,
sure.
B,
how things would work there, what the timing would be, and with the phone in the stomach and the things and the explosions and the kidnappings and the guy who came back from the dead to do the stuff that he didn't know about, presumably, or did he? I don't know. He doesn't seem to.
I think he did know.
I just don't think it makes a lot of sense. Anyway,
but it's an amazing performance.
I mean, but you say you can't argue about it. I had this argument in the pub after Sausage Party on Monday night. Me and Terry.
Uh-huh.
She is insistent, and she said it on TV not so long ago.
Uh-huh.
She's insistent Jack Nicholson's Joker is better.
Whoa.
I really like Jack Nicholson's Joker, and I would have an argument that he's scarier in some ways. What he does to Jerry Hall is genuinely creepy on a whole other level. It's somehow worse than all the killing that Heath Ledger does, the whole acid in the face thing. That is not nice.
I know.
And so he is a really, really sinister Joker. I wouldn't necessarily argue with her on that. I just think Heath Ledger is a more fascinating take on the character.
And besides... I don't know, but there's no way, I think, for example, that Jerry Hall would be attracted to a mega-rich megalomaniac who's older than her.
That it does fall down, I guess, on that in the film.
That movie's always just never quite rung true for me.
It's not gonna convince anyone. Or a flamboyant, weirdly dressed figure. That's not her either. Do you know what I mean?
I love Jack Nicholson's Joker. I would have him on this list as well. In fact, what's interesting is, so do people specify... when they were sending him in, that this is the Christopher Lee Dracula I'm picking, the Bela Lugosi Dracula, the Heath Ledger Joker. They didn't.
Yeah, they did.
The Joker. And
I mean, it's a leap for us to say that guy probably means Bela Lugosi. That guy probably means.
We did in a couple of cases go back and ask for clarification where that wasn't obvious.
I do love the Jack Nicholson Joker. He's so flamboyant. I think he has better quotes than the Heath Ledger one. But that's a great performance. All right, we're into the top 20 now. Betty Davis as Jane Hudson in Whatever Happened to Baby Jane.
God,
don't give it
yes.
away in case Johnny hasn't seen it.
God, yes. This got under my skin in a whole other way. I think it's that idea. It's the same thing in Misery. It's the idea of being completely in someone else's power and them not having your best interests at heart. That is a terrifying position to be in. And so, yeah, I find it really scary.
Just try getting married. Kidding.
I think that
Kidding.
Was a proposal.
Kidding. Was it?
In that case, my answer is no.
Oh, no. Rejected live on the Empire podcast. What's my wife going to say when she finds out? 19. Alex DeLarge, Malcolm McDowell in A Clockwork Orange. The piece even begins villain or victim? The answer is, of course, both.
So in our 50 greatest victims list, he'll be featuring there as well.
That's next issue.
Happy
with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, iconic. Yeah. And speaking of iconic, they're all iconic. From this point on, just assume iconic status. 18, Christian Schell. Probably mispronouncing that. Lawrence Oliver. I'm probably mispronouncing that. In Marathon Man. The evil Nazi dentist.
Yeah, I think just drilling into, if you'll forgive me, everyone's fear of going to the dentist. It's not a good combo, is it? Dentist and Nazi.
It's a scene that you watch there, and you just shift in your seat, and you just can imagine that drill coming ever closer to you, and you're freaking out, man.
I would suggest two other dentists should be on this list. Steve Martin's dentist.
Correct. Little Shop of Horrors.
And Corbin Burnson.
Yes.
Of course, as the dentist.
I mean, I'm with you on the first one. Let's just leave it there.
Where's Larry Drake as Dr. Giggles? Number 17. The Monster. Boris Karloff. Frankenstein. 1931.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking iconic, it doesn't get much more iconic than that. But again, we could reignite the villain or victim question, I think, with the creature, with the monster, with the shape, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, you think of the little girl, don't you, down by the river?
Yeah.
Yeah. Intriguing that of the Universal monsters, he's so much further up the list than the Bela Lugosi Dracula. Yep. Mm. And the other ones don't make it on there.
Yeah, better publicist.
Number 16. Oh, it's Tommy Udo, Richard Widmark, pushing people down the stairs and giggling like a lunatic in Kiss of Death, the original Kiss of Death.
Yeah.
Who plays that role in the remake? Is it Nick Cage? I don't think there's a.
If it's not, it should be.
Direct. It should be.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a direct Tommy Udo, but I think Nick Cage plays the bad guy in that version. Where's Nick Cage in this list? Honestly. Tommy Udo, Richard Widmark. Happy? Good choice?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It's best, his first role, and probably still his best role.
That's depressing, isn't it? That's got to hurt.
He did pretty well.
Yeah
but yeah, you know, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
He was in the Swarm. He's not going to beat it now, is he?
No. Okay.
15. Henry F. Potter, Lionel Barrymore in It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, the most hissable, booable character on this list, I think. The one that you genuinely want to throw things at the cinema screen every single time you watch it. How can he be that horrible?
He's a nasty piece of shit.
He is awful, and poor George Bailey is just victimised by
him. He's also a nasty piece. No, he's not.
He's
Sorry.
The opposite of that.
Yes, this is true.
Oh,
I mean... If I'd been George Bailey, though, I would still have taken his job offer.
Right, okay, but, you know, this is why you're not George Bailey, and this is why It's a Wonderful Life is a classic, you know.
No, for real, it's on my Fav 7 Films.
Hashtag Fav 7 Films.
But he should have taken the job offer. Like, he should have taken that job offer.
But it was essentially an offer to sell his soul.
No, I understand that. I'm fine with it.
You're like, okay with the soul selling?
Trips to Europe. Yep. I mean,
fat stacks of Benjamins.
Come on.
No, I go
he
nowhere.
He could have brought him down from the from within.
From the within side. No, I still don't buy it. Boo to Lionel Barrymore and boo to you as well, sir.
And Pottersville looks way better than Bedford Falls.
How dare you?
It looks way more fun. Me and Chris would have a right time on that town.
Yep.
You're monsters. You're just monsters.
I will say, in mitigation to Johnny's theory, for what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and suffer the loss of his soul? Jesus Christ said that, everybody. So
thanks, Chris.
Just want to... throw a shout out there to our saviour. But yeah, no, he's a shit.
He's the worst.
Potter, not Jesus.
And he's also responsible for the whole, you know, bank problem in the first place. He stole that money.
He's not responsible for the Wall Street crash.
No, for the other bank problem where the bank examiner comes and they haven't got the money because he's nicked the money.
That is despicable.
That's despicable.
Horrible. And you know what's interesting? Unless I've forgotten how this movie goes, he doesn't get his comeuppance.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He just, you know,
he just carries on being an evil, snidey, capitalist bastard.
But the whole town is then united around George Bailey, so it's okay.
George Potter. Number 14, Norman Bates.
Yeah.
In Psycho, played, of course, by Anthony Perkins. I don't think anyone's going to argue with that. He is awesome.
Me bad.
Number 13, Johnny Friendly, Lee J. Cobb in On the Waterfront.
Yeah, I think. Do you think?
Yeah, interesting. Again, it's not one you would have immediately come up with, is it? But, yeah, it's an interesting choice.
I think David Morrissey was one of the people who chose this.
Right.
I don't know who else chose it. It would have been interesting to see all 26 lists and how many people recurred on different people's lists. But yeah.
Great hat in that film. He has an amazing hat.
That's all what we look for.
That's all you need. Well, it is all you look for because number 12 has also a great hat. And that's Frank from Once Upon a Time in the West. Henry Fonda. Mm. Playing against type in the Sergio Leone classic. Yeah, when we talked earlier on about is there another Western bad guy on the list, I was hoping Frank would be on the list, and he is.
Yeah,
but he's not the highest. We've got more, another one to come.
Yeah,
Yeah, and I always thought Henry Fonda's, like, because he has those extraordinary eyes. I always thought they kind of suited a villain better in some ways, and I think they you know, they delved into that here and took him there. And it's sometimes good to see a guy who's played a hero for years and is a bit bored of it taking on a different side of himself.
We're still waiting for Tom Hanks to do that, really, aren't we?
He tried, bless him, but it doesn't fit. It just doesn't seem natural.
Mm. Yeah, he's so good. He's so good. Interestingly, I love how we've used the shot of his death scene.
Spoiler, what if Johnny hasn't seen that one either? Come on.
He's not dead in the picture, though.
No, he's not. Well, he's just been shot.
You can't tell that, though.
Well, if it was bigger, you could tell. Because, you know, he's just spun around having been shot by harmonica. Not to give it away, but at the end of the movie.
He's been shot by harmonica?
It looks like those two are on the same team in this picture.
It does, doesn't it? I love that shot. It's one of those really interesting, really iconic shots of a movie. Like, I probably saw that shot before I saw the movie. And you don't really know that it's towards the end of the film. Like, it's like on the back of the Dawn of the Dead video cover, one of the main four characters is seen as a zombie. On the back, on the very back of the video cover. Anyway.
And you're like, wow, this hasn't...
Yeah, I wonder what happens to him. All.
This hasn't ruined my enjoyment of this film one iota.
Number 11, The Wicked Witch of the West.
Hell to the yes.
Margaret Hamilton, Wizard of Oz.
I mean, if we're getting into iconic villainy, then she is the one. And of course, she's also seen her herself be made into a hero in a spin-off kind of fan fiction almost way with Wicked. But she's so hissibly evil. I feel like actually, if Lionel Barrymore's Potter is booable, she's more hissable. Maybe there's a difference there, I don't know. But she is, she's fantastically...
Yeah, come on.
I don't know, there's just... I feel like we'd be more hissing when she turns up and booing when he turns up.
Shall we say villains and you will boo or hiss them depending on... And then we'll work it out.
Then we'll figure it out. Okay.
I think... Which would be most annoying to be sat beside in the cinema?
Hissing.
Boo. I think, you can join in a boo.
Yeah, you can join, yeah. It's a hiss,
you're just worried that someone's urinating on the seat next to you.
What kind of cinema do you go to? Anyway, but she is a fantastically evil villain. I mean, she goes for the little dog too. Come on. She's terrible.
Is it? Yeah. I mean, is she definitely the villain?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Unless you watch Wicked.
Well,
in which case, no.
Yeah. Is Wicked canon?
No. Yes and no, I don't know. It's more popular probably nowadays, but no.
Yeah, I don't care for The Wizard of Oz at all.
What?
Next.
Tommy DeVito, Joe Pesci. Goodfellas, strangely overlooking his Home Alone character.
I mean, again, not really a villain as you watch the film, right? I mean, he is a bad guy, and he is the baddest of those guys, probably, but he is, like, someone you're basically rooting for. You don't want him dead.
No.
He's interesting, though, because he's one of those people, like, I'm sure we've all met people like this in real life who have that hair-trigger temper, and you just know that you cannot say the wrong thing to this person or do the wrong thing to this person or it'll go off. And in the great pantheon of cinematic psychos, he's very much, you know, we love people like this who are a bit larger than life. We wouldn't want to be in the same room as him, but we're happy watching him torment Spider, the bartender. He's a bit like Begbie in that respect, isn't he?
Yeah.
Begbie's not in this list, which is interesting. But Tommy DeVito, it's a great performance. Again, Oscar-winning performance. And I don't think there's any doubt that he is a bad guy in that sequence, in the spider sequence in particular.
But when he goes to be a made man, you feel for him.
You do. Yeah.
In the second where he realises, oh, fuck, then that is.
And speaking of bad guys who've got a good soul, it's Richard III.
Really? That's your link to Richard III?
Again, I think they're voting for Shakespeare, aren't they? Are they voting for that performance or that character in that iteration of it?
Yeah.
I've actually seen it three times on stage, and it's always been done well, and very, very differently. And I don't think that there's necessarily... I think it's such a strong character that you can basically just say those words and it'll work. But I've seen Kevin Spacey do it. I've seen Martin Freeman do it, and I've seen Ray Fiennes do it. Fiennes was the best.
Hell.
I know, right? Fiennes was the best.
Was Freeman the worst?
No, but I would actually put him and Spacey on a level, even though they did it in very different ways. Honestly, I would. But it is, it's a great villainous role because it
How's
is...
How's that fence, Helen?
I know, it's comfy.
Yeah.
It's a great villainous role because it's really funny. Even just the Shakespearean words are really funny. You don't need to do much to them. But it's and it's really twisted and very, very dark and very modern in its kind of approach to things. It is, it's a really sick role. And I think it actually had an influence on a heck of a lot of the other villains on this list. Because it is that kind of power-hungry grab, but you are seeing it all from his perspective for the most part. So it kind of, you kind of get fooled into rooting for him a little bit.
So our panellists went for the Laurence Olivier version. I love Lee Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
Film. That's a really, really fun treatment of that character as well. Number eight is Jack Palance in Shane. Jack Wilson.
It's like the ultimate character of the black cat, isn't it? It's like he's all in black. Kind of defines that archetype, doesn't he?
My first exposure to this character was actually not through the film, but through Bill Hicks' stand-up routine, where he does an impression of this character, throwing the gun on the ground and going, pick it up.
Yeah.
Number seven, Anton
Sugar.
It's Javier Bardem from No Country for Old Men. Sugar, isn't it? Sugar? I can't remember. Sugar.
It can't be sugar, can it?
Sugar.
Hey, sugar.
Hey, a spoonful of sugar.
is this the most recent? No, probably the Joker. But it's one of the most recent bad guys on the list. And again, an Oscar winner.
Mm-hmm.
And again, a very, very terrifying bad guy. Not least for the haircut.
But seven.
I mean, he's just so
eight.
Unpredictable, isn't it? It's the unpredictability.
Yep. And yet, where, for example, is Kevin Spacey from Seven? Or, for that matter, where is Morgan Freeman from Now You See Me?
Yeah.
Number six, Hans Becker. Oh, hang on a second.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute. It's Peter Lorre from M. Hello, Helen. Look at me. I'm at number six on the list. I didn't expect to be so high up. Helen, why are you hiding your ears? Okay, do you want me to talk in normal voice?
Stop it.
Okay, I'll talk in normal voice. It's Peter Lorre.
Yeah, he's cinema's greatest child molester.
Is that really a list? I mean, please no. He's the worst.
We may have to just
greatest.
Sorry,
I think
John.
Is yeah.
It's fine. Yeah,
he's a notable child molester in cinematic history.
He's awful.
He's not a good guy. That's how we're going to sum him up.
But should we start?
But it's interesting when he gets the kangaroo court thing, and it's not that your sympathies sway, but it becomes an interesting idea, isn't it? About public opinion and about all those kind of issues.
And mob justice.
Yeah.
And a great performance that I think was very much his calling card, wasn't it, Ian?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. To get into American cinema, yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of, this list is just put together in a perfect way for me to segue seamlessly from character to character. Speaking of calling cards in American cinema, Ralph Fiennes, for his wonderful performance as Emmon Guth in Schindler's List. I mean, that put him on the map. And when you think about it, I mean, as much as I love Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive, he won the Oscar over Ralph Fiennes.
Astonishing.
For this.
Biggest Oscar travesty, in my opinion, ever.
The biggest?
Yeah, ever.
Ever.
Ever. There's no decision worse than that.
Not even Roberto Benigni winning the Oscar for Life is Beautiful.
I like Life is Beautiful.
Astonishing. That's one of the greatest performances on film. It's amazing, that film.
I mean, it's the fifth greatest villain of all time.
I know.
Where's Tommy Lee Jones in this list of villains? Nowhere. Nowhere.
Not even for Blown Away. And that's saying something.
I just think of the bit where he's picking off people from his balcony.
Yeah.
And he bends down to pick up his cigarette.
Yeah.
It's astonishing. It's so frightening.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
And again, it's interesting watching the film again because he disappears, doesn't he, for a large part of the film towards the end. At the very, very end, obviously, you see him being executed. But apart from that, he's not really in the movie.
It's kind of like that film is the first third is Schindler, the second third is Amon Gert, and the third third is kind of the Jewish people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he does, he goes missing from it.
But he is so good. So good in that film.
Yeah.
Should have won the Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I visited Amon Gert's house.
Really?
In Poland. It's not, you know, it's built on a camp. Didn't, that's kind of for the film.
Okay.
His house was built away from the camp.
It's an actual tourist destination?
No, it was a press trip.
Oh, right, okay. That would, yeah. Makes me feel all kinds of icky.
Number four, we're getting into this now. The nitty gritty, we're in the top five. Number four, Cody Jarrett, James Cagney, White Heat. And again, it's hard to argue with this one.
But let's try. Who wants to do it?
Hell no, I don't think I can. I mean,
don't look at me.
I don't necessarily think he'd be in my top ten, but if I were doing a list, I'd think he'd be in my top ten. But it's very hard to argue with him. Culturally, again, iconic.
Mm. Mm. And this is another one of those performances that even if you haven't seen the film, you know about this performance. Maybe not Bill Hicks, but The Simpsons, I think, has probably done it. I think everybody's done it.
That made it top of the world.
Into the top three now. Number three, Robert Mitchum as Harry Powell in The Night of the Hunter.
Yeah.
It's a love-hate performance.
Does anyone hate it?
No one hates it.
I mean, they hate the character, I guess.
Yeah. He's terrifying. The original Terminator in this movie. Mm.
Can you make an argument that he's sexy in that film?
I wouldn't make an argument. I don't get the whole Robert Mitchum sexy thing, I'll be honest with you. But, you know, being he's a straight guy.
Dead man.
Don't,
he kind of is.
Yeah. Do you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Isn't he a bit...
No.
But don't you think...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Overruled. he's really great in this. In a sort of implacable sense of evil. Unstoppable throughout the movie. Until he stopped.
and he is another bully going up against the defenseless, which I think is common characteristic of a lot of these people. Mm.
If you've never seen the film, it's a cracking movie. Check it out. Charles Laughton's only directorial effort. Number two, this is interesting.
Yeah.
A lot of people voted for this, obviously. Nurse Ratched, Louise Fletcher. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Mm. So Louise Fletcher obviously also voted on the list.
Did she vote for herself?
Yeah, number one through ten.
No, she did not.
It's interesting to me because if, for example, someone else had come in and voted instead of her, maybe they would have put her high. Maybe she would have got to number one, which
she did joke about voting for herself in order to beat Tony. As she said,
that would be such a Nurse Ratched move.
Yeah, but she did not, in fact, do it. We talked about her in our last one of these podcasts when we were talking about Star Trek, where she was the great villain, Kai Winn. And I think she got that role because of this one, obviously, because I think they share a characteristic, which is this sense of implacable, completely self-satisfied evil. Yeah. Like she is 100%. Sure of her own goodness and isn't going to question it from the likes of you, thank you very much, and is just going to go on about her business. And there's just something kind of untouchable and about that makes it worse and makes you terrified.
It's infuriating to watch.
It's just
of anything in this list, just watching her is just the sense of injustice.
Yeah,
just like just want to grab her off the screen and just shake her and like. And of course,
and
you
not
can't
let her back
movie.
In. Yeah.
Have you tried? Booking more TVs.
Oh my God, my dad was fuming when I first watched it.
She should, at the very least, be called to a meeting with HR.
Yeah. Well, it was a different
at the very
time,
least.
Wasn't it?
70s. Yeah. Everything went in the 70s.
Anyway, yeah. Another Oscar winner as well.
Yes.
This was one of the films to win the five big Oscars, along with our number one.
It's interesting because you could probably make an argument that that actually set her career back.
Yeah, I think it probably. Yeah, I think it possibly did, just because she this kind of overwhelmed everything else that she did to such a great degree. But that's because it is an incredible, incredible role. Yeah.
Winning an Oscar didn't set number one back. All right, should we do a drum roll?
Or did it?
I think everybody knows.
Drum roll. It's Malekith the Accursed. Who knew? No, it's Hannibal Lecter. The Anthony Hopkins vintage from The Silence of the Lambs.
And we should be very clear that it is The Silence of the Lambs and not any other time he played it and played it differently.
Yes.
And Hammier.
Nor is it the young Hannibal nonsense, which again tries to turn a perfectly good villain into an anti-hero.
Yeah.
And that is wrong. But, you know, in the original film, and he's in it for, what, 18 minutes, something like that? Mm, maybe not even. He is chilling and terrifying and absolutely magnetic. You can't really look away.
Yeah. Famously chooses the wrong wine to eat with his liver.
Oh, you wouldn't have a nice Chianti?
Absolutely not.
What would you? Well, what would you have with a nice Chianti or
it's
with a liver?
Robert Shaw, it's like villains. They just don't know their wines.
Just don't know their wines. It's chosen because it's different in the book, isn't it? In the book, he chooses a very complimentary wine, but the screenwriters decided that no one would know that wine, so they changed it to a more famous one. It doesn't go with liver.
As a non-drinker, I had never picked up on that.
That
my goodness.
Monster.
Oh, that's the worst thing of all. Is it?
It's a trait about what we like about our villains, though, in that we like our villains to be intelligent a lot of the time, don't we? We don't like stupid villains, or they don't tend to be the ones that stick around, do they?
And there's also an issue here of how your villain affects your hero. So when they created the Joker, for example, in the Batman comics, they talked about the fact that the hero is obviously always going to win. But if you make your villain really, really scary and intimidating and powerful, then for your hero to win, he has to be even more so of all those things. And that makes him look even better. So the better your villain looks, the better your hero looks. And that certainly worked out for Clarice in Silence of the Lambs as well. And to an extent, actually, also for number two in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, you know, by standing up to her for as long as he does, it gives you an idea of how strong he is.
And so to some extent, Foster can share in the credit of that performance.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, their scenes together are amazing.
Well, I don't know if you read the piece we did with Jodie Foster a few months ago, but I mean, she absolutely says that, you know, they stayed apart, so they didn't really know each other during film. It was only afterwards, and they're like, "You terrify me. Oh, you terrify me too. Oh, let's be mates now." That, like, it changed.
Did we just become best friends?
I think we did.
But I would argue that this role actually, I mean, he's been successful, but I would argue it was his last really great performance, and that most of the time he relies on hamminess.
I'm gonna
name one.
The Edge.
Nope.
Remains of the Day.
Is the one, isn't it?
Remains of the Day.
Okay, so after then.
Thor, the Dark World. I mean, his scene with Malekith the Accursed just crackles with electricity.
Stop trying to make Malekith the Accursed happen.
But I think you do. I think Morgan Freeman has the same problem, that he gets hired for certain roles now where certain things are expected of him, and that relies on him more often than not to
Shawshank his way out.
Over the top. To really act loudly with hand movements. Do you not think?
I don't think of Morgan Freeman being associated with lots of hand movements.
I'm talking about him being hired for a certain type of role, and Anthony Hopkins, I think, is hired for these roles where he is expected to overact in a certain way. I think Morgan Freeman plays a very Morgan Freeman centric characters now, which now you would like, oh, it'd be great if, and there, you see it elsewhere as well, you're like, oh, that's quite good, but Morgan Freeman would be better in that role playing Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, it's like when you're putting together Now You See Me, who do you get to play the bad guy? I mean, Michael Caine, yeah, but it's got to be Morgan Freeman, right? Mm-hmm. Which is one of the reasons I was upset at the sequel for retconning that character. One of the great villains of our time, whose name escapes me. but he was very, very good. So that's the list. We've raced through it as best we can, from 50 to 1. Fantastic list. Mm. I would, obviously, if we all made our top 50, it would differ. Are there any glaring omissions? Let's all go through. Let's all have one omission. Oh. One character that you would put in that list. Johnny, let's start with you.
I think the shark from Jaws.
Oh, you pinch my idea.
I have some spares. You can have mine.
It's not as though it would be without precedent, because we have a non-human entry in the list, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a non-humanoid, right? The id is non-humanoid. I'm just trying to look through quickly to see if there are more. Are there more?
No, that's it. There's no alien from Alien. There's no The Thing from The Thing. Yeah.
So I think... Does he have a Bruce? Right.
Bruce
from Jaws, I think, and I mean, maybe it's a case that as the films decreased in quality, people thought less and less of this shark, and the shark, by the time of Jaws: The Revenge, Jaws is no longer as impactful as he once was. But I think, absolutely, I mean, that is a terrifying, remorseless killing machine.
Yeah, as is the Terminator.
As is the Terminator.
So your choice, Damien?
Well, now he's stolen George, yeah. the Terminator, absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Which, again, is something that's been you look at it in the light of Terminators 2, 3, 4, 5, and however many there are now. So I think, you know, but the first one, just terrific. Yeah, so frightening.
Yeah, the first one is really pure villainy.
You could make an argument for either of them, either Arnold Schwarzenegger in the first one or Robert Patrick in the second one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
I would.
There's just like to give a quick shout out to, so in terms of people being held in other people's power, we almost had a couple more on the list who I think didn't quite place, but Mrs. Danvers from Rebecca, yeah. Is a definitely very, very scary and very villainous mm-hmm. example of that. HAL 9000, I would say, from 2001, mm-hmm. Also everybody's in, yeah. literally in his power, and you know he doesn't use that well. But I'm going to nominate another person who almost made the list, and that's Eve Harrington from All About Eve,
yep.
who is the person who worms their way into your circle and then usurps you, and she's really nasty and creepy and just underhanded and devious and untrustworthy and
but we've
bad.
Seen that from the other angle, and that character can be a hero because we saw it in Mean Girls,
mm-hmm. yeah,
so that character can be absolutely depending on whose point of view you're watching it from.
True But I would say that Eve is definitely
oh no for
not
real
a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've obviously mentioned a whole bunch of people, villains, you know, Jason Voorhees and Michael Myers, people like that, who you know, I would have put in the list. But what's interesting is because it's voted for by actors, mm-hmm. I think if Team Empire put this list together, or if it had been reader voted, I think Loki would have been on the list.
That's true.
Very high up the list as well.
I'm going to put Belloc on the list.
Belloc. You
champagne
son of a bitch. he'd have been, I'd have put the torch from Top Secret. No. But for me, the glaring omission, top 10, maybe even top 1, is Dr. William Weir from Event Horizon. No, it's Hans Gruber from Die Hard.
Yeah.
Why is that, Chris?
I think he is one of the great bad guys. You want to get away with it. You mm-hmm. want him to succeed at the end, as well as the hero. He is suave. He is debonair. He has a great line in dialogue and natty suits. And again, going back to the idea, he's one of those people who's very, very smart. He's a smart bad guy. Mm. He's not necessarily a bad guy. Yes, he's planning to kill a whole bunch of people so he can steal $640 million in bearer bonds.
But who among us would not?
Precisely. Who are we to judge? And I think it's one of the great iconic performances, one of the great debut performances as well on screen from Alan Rickman. I'm a little surprised as well, given how recently Alan Rickman passed away, and I thought he might still have been in the ether when people were... Yeah. Putting this list together, that Hans Gruber, or indeed even the Sheriff of Nottingham, is not on this list either.
Yeah. And Call of Christmas.
Yeah, the showier, flashier performance yeah. of the two.
Yeah.
But for me, yeah, Hans Gruber, all day long and twice on Sundays.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
And if the last one on this list is the Joker, who since then could possibly have made that list? Who are the recent villains? Has it been a great villain?
Well, Loki.
I mean, yeah.
This year, has it been a great villain this year?
Put Loki on the list.
I don't know. There has been a great villain this year. I mean, the best super. In fact, we've had bad villains. We've had Apocalypse, and we've had the CGI monstrosity at the end of Batman v Superman, and we've had Jesse Eisenberg ruining Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Right.
And in fact, the only the
Maybe
best
sure
superhero
can.
Film we've had actually. I always think succeeded because it had a very low key villain that just like sat back and let the big heroes actually start to fight against each other.
Yeah.
I mean, Shere Khan from The Jungle Book, we could argue for this year. But no, it hasn't been...
But
I mean,
you wouldn't have this year's Shere Khan above the animated version, would you?
No, probably not. But I'm just trying to think of recent villains that succeeded. Would you put in Tom Hardy in The Revenant? This is a question, not necessarily a command.
I personally wouldn't. Again, I throw him in like Colonel Kurtz's camp of I can't understand a bloody word you're saying. Therefore, how can you scare me?
Darling, please enunciate.
But my films of the year so far, I don't really think are bad guy driven in that way, apart from Civil War. Creed doesn't really have a bad guy. It does have Tony Ballou as the ultimate fighter that Adonis Creed fights, and in real life Tony Ballou is Nevertonian, so therefore he's a villain, but
Hateful Eight, there's no bad guys in The Hateful Eight. It's all good. Everyone's okay. Well, Daisy Domergue, I think, is interested in that movie because she ultimately reveals herself to be the worst of the worst. Yeah. So you could maybe make a case for that character. But this year,
ooh,
I think it's
been Kylo Ren would be the one I'd add to the list.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that's one we really should have thought of earlier.
It's last year.
Yeah, we were discussing this year. It's fine.
Is it? does that oversight?
I honestly think he's a fascinating villain, and I think what they did with him was really interesting, and I can't wait to see more of him. So he would go on the list for me.
No, yeah. I'm looking forward to him finding a second dimension to him in the next Star Wars movie.
How even dare you?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you wrote in your review that he's the greatest Star Wars villain.
I did. I will stand over that.
The Emperor's not on this list. But anyway, that's listen, we could do this all day, but we
shouldn't.
Darth Maul,
if we're talking about icons.
Oh, Jesus, Darth Maul. Right, we need to get these 26 people back in here. That list, honestly, the 26 people, Joseph Pilato is Captain Rhodes. If you've never seen Day of the Dead, then check it out. Truly great bad guy.
Who do you think, if we'd done it with 26 different people, which villains do you think are always on this list? Hannibal Lecter, probably. Nurse Ratchet,
yeah.
Probably. I mean,
the Wicked Witch.
Who doesn't fall
the
away?
The Wicked Witch, the Childcatcher. I think that those are definitely still on any list you care to name.
Yeah, Darth Vader's on the list, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Dracula and the monster, I think, should still be on there.
Yeah. I think maybe Travis Bickle swaps out for Max Cady. Or even Rupert Pupkin.
I'm actually surprised that neither Max Cady's there.
Yep.
Yeah.
You could easily have had both on this list in the same way you did with Dracula.
Indeedly. Indeedly, deedly. Right, we should get out. Because otherwise we'll be the villains keeping the pod booth occupied while people try to get in. So that is it. Yes, that's it for our 50 Greatest Movie Villains special. Hope you enjoyed it. As ever, the flagship podcast, the mothership podcast, is out every Friday. If you don't already listen to it or subscribe, we would love it if you would do so. And hey, maybe go on iTunes as well and give us a lovely 5-star review. Or any other star rating that you want to give, but we prefer the 5-star ones, if we're completely honest. Of course, if you're an evil villain, give us one. But alright, so all that remains now is for us to say goodbye, and we're going to do so with an interesting wrinkle suggested by Helen O'Hara, that we're each going to bow out with our own evil laugh. So, it's farewell from Johnny Pyle.
Mwahahaha!
Really went for it there.
Not that evil.
Really?
No, I didn't.
More triumphant,
so.
I would say, than anything.
Yeah.
But evilly triumphant. I mean, I've done something bad. I'm not.
He's looked over your. That's the laugh of someone who looks over your shoulder at the ATM and has got your PIN number and is about to mug you.
Shall I try again?
Yeah, go one more. One more.
So, what's my motivation here? I'm just evil. I'm laughing. Am I evil and watching comedy?
You've made me watch as you've taken Hans Gruber off the list.
Okay.
All right. That's good. All right, it's goodbye from Johnny then. It's goodbye from Ian Freer.
The horror.
He went full Sean Harris. I've just peed myself. That was proper.
That was my modern brand.
I know, but it slipped into Sean Harris. Okay. Believe me.
Is it technically a laugh?
All right. I don't know if anyone's listening to this by this point. It's goodbye from Helen. All right. Okay, that's pretty good.
It wasn't my best.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next time. Or then again, maybe we won't. See you next time. Bye.